Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello and welcome to the Leaders Toolbox here on Radio at Firehouse.com. This is Peter Matthews. I'm an editor here at Firehouse, and I just want to say thank you for joining us today. This show is a monthly program that we put on with Fire Chief Rich Gassaway to offer some advice and some ideas to firefighters and fire officers who are having problems on the leadership end of the fire station operations. On our last show, we had talked about mentoring for quite a bit, and the Firehouse.com poll returned some pretty interesting results. Over 5,000 people had cast their votes and gave us the following results. 33% of those who responded said that they have a fire service mentor and it has really helped in their success, while 4% said they've had a mentor but have not had much time to work on development. 20% of those who responded said they have not had a fire service mentor and feel that it would be a good idea to have one. And 40%, actually, the largest number of all here, said they've never given much thought to having a fire service mentor. Chief, you know, we don't have to rehash everything from the last show, but I'm quite surprised by the 40% being the largest number, saying they've never even thought about it. You want to just give us a quick couple thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if, particularly whether I'm surprised or disappointed. But you think about it in the fire service, we are taught to be, you know, independent and self-sustaining, and it's not uncommon for us to try to find solutions to problems ourselves without reaching out for help. And some folks would say, you know, if I reached out for help, that's a sign of weakness. And so I'm not terribly surprised to see the number of folks who haven't given much thought to a mentor. I'm particularly encouraged by the third of the respondents who say they have a mentor and that it's been beneficial for them. For those who haven't given it much thought, I would ask that they would reconsider the benefit of learning from other people's experiences, from their mistakes, from their wisdom. You'll find yourself learning much faster when you expose yourself to someone who has been there and done that and has all the scars to show for it. And I think that those 40%, if they would latch on to someone who has an interest in seeing them develop, would see their learning curve improve or increase exponentially by having someone who has walked and talked the leadership, fire service leadership, I don't want to say game, but has been there. And those folks, you can certainly start at square one and try to learn them all yourself, or you can take a much easier route and have a mentor help you through and share their experiences.
Okay. All right, well, we'll continue to try and come up with some polls during upcoming shows on the Leaders the Leaders Toolbox. But let's get into the questions for this week. And if anybody does have a question or a comment, please feel free to send them in by email at podcast@firehouse.com. Chief, the first question that comes in is from a volunteer fire chief. He says he's received a few comments from his members about another member who has been running his mouth and is causing quite a bit of problems. Allegations include remarks towards another member based on his religious beliefs and some indirect comments made towards the victims and or patients during alarms. The member who I'm having this problem with is a very active participant in my department. He responds to a lot of calls and is very helpful in day-to-day tasks that are needed at a volunteer station. But his actions are causing much friction, and I'm currently weighing my options as suspension or termination. One concern I have about terminating a volunteer is sending out the wrong message to other members. However, this is a serious problem. What do you suggest that I do?
Well, it is a serious problem, especially since the writer ties the issue to comments made regarding a person's religious beliefs. This isn't, it kind of goes into a new realm of seriousness. If you have a person who says, you know, I don't like the kind of car you drive, versus a person who says, I have issues with your religious beliefs, because there are some federal protections for people, you know, based on, you know, race, sex, religion, origin. So this person who is saying these things has the potential to cause themselves, the department's management, a great deal of potential liability. So it is very serious. The one thing that I'm noticing that's missing here, there seems to be a big gap in that we have a group of members who are complaining about the behavior of another member, and then the chief who is contemplating suspension or termination. And what is missing, and this chief may have done this, but he didn't certainly list it in his question, but what is missing here is figuring out whether what he's being told is actually happening. So before he assumes the guilt of the firefighter, and it sounds like perhaps he already has, since he says, I'm weighing suspension and termination, I think he'd better stop the boat and say, first, not to assume what is happening here, and to start to inquire, some would call it investigate, what's going on. Are these things being said? In what context have they been said? Where are the victims? Has the firefighter who's had the statements about religious beliefs made any complaint? Did the victims at the incident scene who he made comments about, did they complain to anybody? Is the chief getting good quality first-hand information on which to make a decision? Now, if somebody came to me and said, person X out there on the street is doing this, 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 and this, I would be foolish if I took that information and then disciplined person X without really understanding what's happening, what's the context of it happening, what's the evidence that it's happening, what's the consequence that it's had for what it's happening. It says it's caused some problems within the department. You know, without more information, we might be dealing with personality conflicts between this person, who the writer says is very active on the department, and some others who might have issues with this person being very active on the department. So it could possibly be a jealousy issue. Maybe this person who's very active is doing a lot of cutting-edge things, going trying new and innovative things, and maybe some folks don't like that, so they're looking to, you know, bring him some trouble. So before the chief jumps into, okay, this was reported to me, and so therefore there's a consequence to this person, I would say investigate or inquire to the parties involved. Go to those people who are complaining and say, I need more detail. I need date, time, location. Who were the witnesses? Did anybody else hear it? And talk to, you know, and build the case for the action before you take the action. So I think the chief here is a little bit ahead of himself, and that he's contemplating suspension or termination. And then I think he owes it to the person who's being accused to go to that person and say, this is what I was told happened. on this date and time, in this context, at this location, I was told that this occurred. What is your side of the story? What happened here? What's the context in which you, you had said these things, and so that I understand the full picture. I'm not getting just one side of the picture. I need to put all the pieces of this puzzle out on the table and fit all the pieces together before I assume what the picture is going to be. And he owes it to that person who's being accused to give them their opportunity to say what happened. Maybe even talk to the victims. He said something to another firefighter about their religious beliefs. Go to that firefighter without implicating the person accused and say something to them about how comfortable are you feeling here working in the department? Are you enjoying it? Are you having any problems, any challenges? Anything you want to talk about? And try to flesh out from that person if they're if they feel any kind of threat or challenge or uncomfortableness based on what happened. And if you have the exact details, you could say, well, on this date and time, it was reported to me that Firefighter X had said this to you. Do you have knowledge of that? Do you remember that? Well, yeah, I do, or no, I don't. Well, if they do remember it, how did that make you feel? Well, I didn't think anything of it, or I was very offended by it. So the context is put into place by the reaction that folks could have to what is being said. Now, simply because the person who has that religious belief wasn't offended by it doesn't necessarily mean, okay, case dismissed. Because if the other complainants were offended by it, even though the person it was geared to wasn't, that doesn't necessarily mean you still don't have a cause for issues. Without getting into specific religions, you say the complainants are religion B, and the person who was taking the complaint or was taking the grief was of religion C. Maybe the person who took the brunt of the comment wasn't offended, but the other folks who have a different religious belief were offended. So the purpose is not to dismiss the claim, but to find out exactly what happened, to talk to all those involved and figure out what happened, and then to talk to the person who is accused of it and find out from their point of view what happened. Now, what you're likely to have happen is somebody is going to say, that didn't happen, or it didn't happen that way, or it's taken out of context. And at some point, the chief is going to have to take all the facts that they've gathered and make a determination of cause of, did this, based on the evidence that I have, did this happen? And if it did, what's the consequences that should be administered as a result of what had happened? Well, the complexity of the situation, and I'm not an attorney by any means, so I certainly don't want to speak as though or have the readers or the listeners think that I'm dispensing legal advice. But in the context of it, it may be possible that the person who had said these things, this behavior could be changed or corrected with some counseling and having them understand the importance of not saying those kinds of things in the presence of other employees. Now, another thing that I would like to put out there for this chief who's having this problem is, does his department have a respectful behavior policy? Is there a policy that says we're not supposed to do these things? We're not supposed to say these kind of things and behave this kind of way. And we have a policy, and we train our people on this policy. Just like we train on incident command and two in and two out, we also train on what's considered respectful behavior in the workplace. And, there's some policy drafts out there. And if this chief wants one, he can certainly email me, and I'll provide him with our city one. I'm not saying it's the model, but there is a policy that we have that says there are certain behaviors that are considered acceptable and not acceptable in the workplace, and we need to train our employees on what is okay and not okay. And you, some folks would say, well, it's common sense that this is okay and this isn't okay. Well, you know, it's not so common sense, because I have seen and heard people say things that I would shudder over. I said, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just heard that person say that. Sometimes it's in a classroom, and you know, they're the instructor, and they're saying things that I think are way, way, way over the line in front of the entire class. And I think to myself, why is this person saying this? You know, this is just not appropriate. And you would think, well, it's common sense, but it isn't always that common sense. And having a policy that stipulates it, and then training your folks about what that policy is. If you don't have a policy, maybe you could send this person to a facilitator to get some specific counseling on respectful workplace behavior, and have them sit with a counselor that takes them through, you know, when you say things like this, this is how people can react to that. When you say something like that, this is how people can interpret it. And could you see from another person's point of view, by their religion or their socioeconomic background, that might be offensive to them? And you might find this firefighter saying, you know what? I never thought of that. I never thought of it that way. I did not intend to offend anyone. And now that I see it from that perspective, I'm going to work harder not to do that. Now you've got a win-win, okay? The light bulb came on for him. He realized he had the aha moment. Ah, I get it. That's not right. I wasn't doing it on purpose. And I'll work harder to fix it, okay? And then hold him to task and make sure that he does. Now, you send him to this facilitator, for example, and the facilitator says, you know, when you say certain things a certain way, you know, people can get offended. And this firefighter says, yeah, so what? It's their problem. It ain't my problem. You know, they can grow up, or, you know, that's just life in the firehouse, or, you know, if they want to run with if they can't run with the big dogs, then they got to stay on the porch, or, you know, and takes a different position than the first one of being conciliatory, of seeing the error of their way. You know, if this person just says, well, you know, that's who I am, and if they don't like who I am, and I speak my mind, and if they don't like the way I speak my mind, then that's tough. Well, it's going to be tough on you, the person who has that mindset, because you're going to find yourself in a whole lot of trouble and possibly having to leave our organization, even though you're a very good firefighter and you're very active and very involved. You just can't behave that way. So you're going to have to learn how to hold that in check, because if not, it brings liability to our organization. And discredit when you're talking that way to customers or victims at incident scenes, that's not the image that we want to project out to the community. And so the best case scenario is this person realizes the errors of their ways, they're conciliatory, and they change. Or at least if they don't change, they just learn to keep their mouth shut. The alternative is they don't. And then we have to look at the suspension or going down the road toward the termination. I want to pause for a minute because the writer says, you know, this person is very active in the department. They're very active in calls. They're very active and helpful in all the day-to-day tasks that are being done around the department. So, you know, I sense that this chief is saying this person is valuable to our organization despite this shortcoming. However, a person who's very active in calls, a person who's very engaged and maybe doing the fundraising and maybe they're an instructor, and they're all these wonderful qualities, those are not the proverbial get-out-of-jail-free card. In other words, just because you're active and involved and participating doesn't give you the right to be disrespectful and maybe even discriminatory in this particular instance toward coworkers or toward citizens on the street. So when at the end of the day, when you've got this situation, the balance between this very active person who's doing something very inappropriate in the organization, and the respectful behavior has to trump the all the good that they're doing, and that they have to stop doing those things that are bringing harm or discredit to the organization, or causing turmoil or morale problems, or friction, I think, was one of the things that he had said it caused, that cannot be allowed to continue. There's an underlying issue here, and that is, why is this person behaving this way? Is it how he was brought up? Is that does he engage his mouth before he engages his brain? And we all have known and seen people like that. You know, what's the reason? And work on focusing on changing his behavior. And that is, you know, I'm not telling you can't have opinions on certain religions. I'm just telling you that when you're at work or in the presence of our patients or customers or coworkers, keep your mouth shut about it. Now, that I can tell you. I'm not telling you that you can't think, you know, think whatever you want to think, but I'm telling you that you can't say those things in a workplace setting and get away with them. And then as far as suspension or termination, you know, you try teaching, you try coaching, you try counseling. If all of that doesn't work, if you can't get them to change their behavior, then it's a possibility that they may need to leave the organization. And that can have an effect, for sure. As the chief says, he's concerned about the impact it would have. But you have to also balance that to the impact that it has to keep a person who has that kind of disposition, who isn't willing to change, the impact that has of keeping them on the department. And the other good people that you're going to lose, and the potential liability that you're going to carry for keeping that person around when there's clearly no indication that they're willing to change and abide by the department's rules for respectful behavior. If it comes down to where you need to terminate, I would suggest getting legal counsel and making sure that you have legal counsel on board, because it could result in some other issues. He may come back to the department and say he was discriminated against. The victim who had the religious beliefs comments made about him may then come back and make a claim against the department. So you're going to want to make sure that if you get down to the suspension or termination, that you have a legal foundation on which to take those actions. And it's not just your opinion or belief or someone else's frustration that you're basing it on, that you're basing it on good legal advice. But let's hope that you can resolve that problem before you would get to the suspension or termination. That's the win-lose solution, and I'm always about trying to find the win-win, and that is trying to get that person to realize the mistakes they're making and change the way they're behaving, so that they can continue to be productive and active, and the other members won't feel the frustration, and you won't carry the liability that they bring by behaving that way.
Okay, one of the sort of stepping back a few sentences here was, you know, the sort of like the EOE rights of you know, everybody in the department. With a volunteer department, I guess a larger city fire department, you probably have somebody from you know, city services or some outside agency coming in to do the EOE training. In a volunteer department or a smaller career department, you may very well have you know, just a line officer or a firefighter kind of reading over steps in a book and stuff like that and not taking it seriously. Would you recommend going to a third party in a situation like that just to make sure that people are aware that the training? I went through a training a couple of years back provided by BFIS, actually, and it was very good because they told you right off the bat, you know, here's 7 cases where people have been, you know, terminated from their jobs for, you know, what could be a very misunderstood comment in the fire station, and now people are out of jobs or are no longer able to volunteer with a particular agency. What are your feelings towards having a third party versus somebody in-house to do the EOE training to make sure people know that it is serious and it's not just mandatory training for government's sake.
Yeah. There are sometimes free resources available or low-cost resources available to you to bring somebody in from the outside to provide that training. You might even be able to find an equal employment officer at a local business or a corporation who'd be willing to come in and do a program for the firefighters, on a drill day. So it's not something I think you have to spend a lot of money for to get a quality, well-educated trainer in. If the risk that you have of having somebody in the firehouse do it is if they don't understand the equal employment opportunity law and some of the other regulations, Americans with Disabilities and civil rights, and that they just start going through the policy in a routine fashion, and somebody starts asking questions, well, what about this or what about that? Well, then you've stumped them because they don't necessarily know the answer. Now, they might say, I don't know the answer, or they might try to make one up. When they start making up answers, that is their interpretation of what respective behavior is, you have the potential to have some real problems. And, issues of respectful workplace behavior are not just for career fire departments. They're for volunteer fire departments too. Those volunteers are people, and those people have rights. And you think, well, I'm just a volunteer. I don't have to follow, a respectful workplace behavior. I can say and do what I want because I'm a volunteer. You're sadly mistaken if you think that's the case. Disrespectful behavior in a fire department, even if you're volunteer, that's a work setting. You have bosses and you have subordinates, and people have to follow rules and listen to orders, and you can have things like sexual harassment and very inappropriate workplace behavior occur even in a volunteer department. And I hope that we don't have a whole lot of readers out there naive enough to believe that they're exempt because they're a volunteer organization. So I'd say find yourself a good framing, respectful workplace behavior policy. It can come from industry. It can come from another fire department. And then make sure your folks are well trained and that they do fully understand what the policy is about and what it means. When it says you can't do this, let's talk about what that means so that we have it in context. Does it mean this? Does it mean that? And that's where bringing somebody in from the outside, as you had described there, Pete, gives a special perspective, because those EOE trainers or specialists in industry have a knowledge base that most of us, average folks in the fire service, don't. Let's not try to kid ourselves into thinking that we're the expert in something that we're not. Because there's too much on the line here.
Okay. Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and take another question here in the second half. If anybody does have any questions for Chief Gassaway, please feel free to send them in by email to podcast@firehouse.com. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox here on Radio@firehouse.com. Got another question here today from a chief who's been promoted. It says, I started my career many years ago as a firefighter and a proud member of the local International Association of Firefighters. Now I'm a fire chief, and boy, are things different. I'm struggling with my loyalties. I feel obligated to do what my bosses in City Hall tell me to do, but this often leads to criticism from the firefighters and the union president. It seems when I do what makes the firefighters happy, my boss isn't happy with me. And when I do what makes my boss happy, the firefighters are upset with me. Chief, I'm sure that's not just a City Hall problem, but like anything else, but do you have any way this guy can kind of stay in the middle?
I think I might be able to help him out a little bit. First of all, it's important to realize that perspectives do change. And you know, for all of you out there listening, think about if you're married now, are things different than when you were single? Do you look at things differently now as a married person as you did when you were single? Or if you're divorced, do you look at marriage now differently than when you were married? Or if you have kids now, do you look at the world differently and things that go on around you differently than when you had no kids? And for those of us who are older now, do you look at things in the world differently than when you were looking at it through a young person's eyes? So indeed, perspectives do change. And for somebody to look you in the eye and say, well, you've changed. You know, you used to be this way, and you've changed now. You're something different than you used to be. That's going to happen. You know, things are going to happen that do change us. You know, just think about if you were single and you were going out every Friday night with all your buddies and having a good time and enjoying yourself and rolling in early Saturday morning and then sleeping into 1 or 2 in the afternoon and then all of a sudden you get a girlfriend. And, you know, now she wants to go out on Friday nights instead of, you know, you going out with your buddies. And she wants to go do something on Saturday instead of you sleeping in after being out all night Friday night, and your buddies turn to you and say, see, you've changed. You know, and it's her fault. You got that girlfriend and everything's changed. And things do change. Your priorities change. Your perspectives change. The things that are important change. And so, you know, this chief shouldn't be surprised that things changed for him. He should have been anticipating as he progressed up the chain of command and saw in each progressive position that he held that things changed and perspectives were different and expectations were different. So I'm hoping he's not finding himself just sitting down in the chief seat you know, early on in his chiefing career and saying, wow, I didn't see this coming. I would have never anticipated that I would change, that I would become a person who would not carry 100% of my loyalty, you know, for the firefighters or the fire union, and that I now have to bring some balance to this perspective. So hopefully he's not finding that happening. If he is, then he's got a little bit of an uphill battle. And my first piece of advice to this chief is to realize that he has an obligation to carry many loyalties and to keep those loyalties in balance. And that's not an easy thing to do, but he is obligated to be loyal to his firefighters. He's also obligated to be loyal to his boss. He's also obligated to be loyal to the customers that they serve on the street. He's also obligated to be loyal to his family and to bring balance between work and his personal life. And those are just four very quick off the top of my head examples of areas that you need to be loyal to, and a fire chief's position. And he should not be surprised that there's a difference in expectations of his firefighters than of his boss, because they look at things through different lenses. Now, if you look at the focus of a firefighter's union, it is to take care of the firefighters. It is to see that they're compensated fairly, that they're getting fair benefits, fair working conditions, you know, fair treatment in discipline and grievances, and, you know, all of the codicils that are spelled out in the union contract as protection and concern for the well-being of the firefighter. That's their focus, as it should be. Take care of the firefighter. So what is the focus and perspective of the boss? Well, that's different. You know, the city manager who's this fire chief is also has to carry some loyalty to, may have a focus that's different and focused more on efficiencies, budget considerations, cross-departmental fairness and, you know, issues of the fire department? How does that relate to police and public works and those different employee groups and their unions? And so the chief's, fire chief's boss has a different perspective, a different focus than the fire chief's union. And that, and I'm not saying that one is right or one is wrong. I'm just saying they're different. They have different focuses, different perspectives. They could look at the same picture and each see two different things. And that doesn't make one right or one wrong. I think of the example, and you've probably seen these illustrations, these drawings, and it'll say, you know, look at this drawing and see if you see the picture of a young woman's face or an old woman's face. And you look at it and say, well, I see the young woman's face. And the next person will say, no, I see this wrinkly old woman's face. Well, how do you see that? Well, look at this. This is her nose. Oh, on the young woman's face, that's the chin. So there's two people looking at the same illustration that's designed for that purpose, by the way, and seeing two different things at the same time. So we shouldn't be surprised when we have that with our union and with our bosses, that they see things the different ways. I think this chief would do himself well if he stopped trying to make everyone happy. You know, he says, you know, sometimes I do what's right and my firefighters are happy, and sometimes I do what's this way and my boss is happy. I think he should stop trying to make everyone happy and just start doing his job. And he'll find that he'll have much more success if he focuses on doing what's right for the mission of the organization and right for the community, and stop trying to chase his tail and making everyone happy. Because in the process of trying to make everyone happy, he's just going to make everyone unhappy, including himself. And it sounds like he's well on his way to being unhappy, because he's very focused on making sure that he has happy bosses and happy employees. And I'm not saying that you purposely go out and try to make your bosses unhappy or make your union firefighters unhappy, but you can't focus your energy and your effort on trying to make sure that everyone's happy all the time, especially when you're dealing with two groups that are on different ends of a perspective that look at things so differently. But what I think the chief can do is he has before him a golden opportunity, and that is one of being able to educate and communicate up and down the chain of command. The chief is in the perfect position to educate his boss on the needs and the perspective and the viewpoints of the firefighters. He has an obligation to do that. The city manager, for example, might say, I have a real problem with firefighters that get paid to sleep. And the fire chief's response to that could be, yep, you're right, if he wanted to just roll over and agree with his boss. Or, the fire chief could use that as an opportunity to educate. Well, they work 24-hour shifts, and in those 24-hour shifts, they're doing this and this and this and this and this and this and this, and by the time evening comes, if you know, because they're working a 24-hour shift, if they don't lay down and rest some, then when we have a call at 3 in the morning and they've been up 18 hours, you know, imagine if that was your mom or your grandma, and they're going to have to go and treat her illness or her injury, or even fight a fire at her house, and they're just physically exhausted, and use that as an opportunity to educate his boss. Now, his boss, you know, still may hold his position, but the fire chief has done everything within his power to educate up the chain of command and to help his boss understand the perspective of the firefighters. Maybe even tell his boss, let's go visit a firehouse. Let's sit down and talk to some of the firefighters. Let's have you do a ride along so you can see what it is that they do. You know, and that boss may have come away from that with a completely, completely different perspective. One of the things that I had done successfully in my department in Ohio, and then I did it again here in Roseville, is I invited my elected officials along to a house burn And we gave him a little bit of training, a one-day training session, taught him how to put on turnout gear, how to wear a face piece. My city manager came along, too. I invited him, and my city manager came along, and I got my elected officials, and we're lighting some fires in his house. And we kept it very controlled. They were small fires. We had safety people, safety lines, just, on our perspective, overkill of protection for these folks, because I didn't want to burn my boss and I didn't want to burn my elected officials, but I did want them to be able to put on some turnout gear and put on an air pack and get on their hands and knees and crawl into an environment that was a little warmer than what they were used to, take away some of their visibility and give them a hose line and let them think they slayed the dragon and have them come out and pull off their face piece and say, man, was that a lot harder than what I ever thought it would be. Ding, now you get it. Now you know why we need to have good turnout gear, good SCBAs, why firefighters need to be well rested, why they earn the compensation that you pay them, and on and on and on and on and on, because they had walked a mile in their shoes. They had spent some time learning about what that job is about. So I think there's an opportunity there for that fire chief to educate up the chain of command. Now, how about down the chain of command? Well, the fire chief, when he was a union firefighter, probably didn't have direct access to City Hall and a city manager and elected officials like he does now as the fire chief. Now he gets to see a different perspective and a whole new group of people who see the fire service in a different way than he saw it when he wasn't the fire chief. So how does he get the firefighters and the union president to see things in the way that the elected officials or the city manager sees them? Well, maybe invite them along to have some meetings with the city manager. You have a department head meeting where the department heads come together. Invite the union president to come along and sit in and participate in the process of seeing day-to-day government, to see the bigger picture, to see that some of these issues transcend beyond just the fire department, and what we do in the fire department can affect the police department, and it can affect the parks and recreation department, and it has a bigger possible impact than what we see, and try to broaden each group's perspectives. You're trying to broaden your city manager's perspective so that they can say, I better understand. Try to broaden your union's perspective so they can say, I better understand now the bigger picture focus. Now, they, on each perspective, they may not like it, and they may not change their point of view, but at least they're better educated now. You know, I've often said about my boss, I don't care if my boss tells me no to something that I come and ask him for, so long as he gave me the benefit of the doubt of understanding why I wanted to do it, how, the cost, if he gave me the time to hear me out and to hear my point of view and then told me no with a good reason as to why he told me no, I still wouldn't like hearing no, but at least I'd respect him and understand why he said no from his point of view. And, you know, if you have a boss whose position is with the union, no to everything. And if you have a firefighters union whose position is yes to everything that we ask for, you certainly have people on two broad ends of the spectrum. And we have to find a way to try to bring them closer together. And I believe that way is through education and through communication up and down the chain of command. Sometimes the bosses don't understand the complexity of the challenges that firefighters face, but also sometimes the firefighters don't understand the complexity of the larger organization and what some of the things that they need or want to do, how it affects the bigger picture. At the end of the day, this fire chief has to be able to look himself in the mirror and say, do I like the person that I am and the way that I boss? In other words, am I balanced? Am I not? I don't want to, as a good fire chief, I don't want to be the yes man to my boss, and I don't want to be the yes man to the firefighters. I want to be a fair, firm, and friendly leader up the chain and down the chain. I have to be able to look in the mirror and like what I see and the kind of boss that I am, and that is the kind of boss for me that is fair and balanced and how I look at issues and opportunities.
Okay, Chief. Well, thank you very much for the insight to that problem. Hopefully that will help out, not only the one who sent in the question, but for anybody else who may be in a similar bind. If you do have any questions or comments about this podcast, The Leader's Toolbox, please feel free to send us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. We'd like to hear from you. And we look forward to having Chief Gassaway back next month for another show. Thank you, Chief.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity, and keep those questions coming.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.